Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Talk with Ashwin and Rhea. So today we will be talking about database as a service. But before we dive in, Ashwin, do you want to do some recap as to what we spoke about in the last episode?
Sure. I think mostly the topics we touched on were the two kinds of database systems, right? We introduced the conversation with the three different layers in an application or a service system, and there's a data layer, which holds your data. There's an application layer, which has the business logic in it. And then there's the presentation layer, which is what the user consumes. And we focused especially on the data layer for the rest of the episode, where we spoke about SQL databases, which are relational in nature, and NoSQL databases, which are for more non-relational data.
So right, exactly. So today we will focus more on the resources that the cloud providers have for relational SQL databases. So before we dive into the resource component, I wanted to ask what you think DAS means.
I remember we spoke about IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS. So DAS would mean, I don't know, database as a service. I'm just taking a guess here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it's database as a service. So it's, again, touches base on the infrastructure that the cloud providers have for us to readily consume database that we consume as a service. So therefore, database as a service. So it's not necessarily a cloud delivery model, but it's kind of the way we consume some of the resources and how we subcategorize it.
Are you saying that each cloud provider has their own version of DAS?
Of course. So every cloud provider has their own version of resources for databases, all kinds of databases, SQL, NoSQL, relational, non-relational. So today's episode, we will only focus on the relational database resources provided by AWS, Azure, and Google. But also before we dive into that, I wanted to go over like the types of databases that are available in the cloud. As you are aware, if you look at like docs.aws.amazon.com or similarly on the Microsoft Azure documentation, you will see that there are a number of database alternatives for developers, which can be summed up in three groups as I find. So one is cloud native, and the second would be, and under cloud native, you have relational and non-relational.
What is cloud native? I've heard that What is it, if you had to dumb it down in layman terms, what is cloud native?
So Ashwin, what cloud native means is that it's an approach to build and run applications that is exploit the advantages of cloud computing delivery model. So it's more about how the applications are built and created rather than where. So if you, to reference this, once we go on to some of the documentation pages, there's a list of cloud resources available. And those are the offerings that AWS has or Azure has, and how we build our infrastructure using those resources is called a cloud native approach.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to, it's a really good question, as opposed to other softwares we can integrate that utilizes the cloud to make some of the modules more automated, such as MongoDB is a big example. So what it does is it's another software that integrates with the cloud. So to facilitate some of the manual steps we would be taking using some of the cloud resources. So cloud native is you're only using the resources available by the cloud providers.
And what is the other model called, the one that adds a layer of automating?
So that is called cloud capable.
So I'm hearing cloud native is one kind of a setup and cloud capable is another kind of service. Service is a better word, right?
Yeah, service is a much better word. And oftentimes you will see they're more hybrid between the two, between cloud native as well as cloud capable, and using components from both.
And does Amazon provide both cloud native and cloud capable Amazon, Microsoft, do these providers play in both the cloud native and cloud capable space, or just one of the two?
So cloud capable, they are separate companies, so to speak, that integrate well with AWS or Azure. So cloud native is the own resources Amazon or Microsoft or Google has from that they build themselves.
And why would there be the need to integrate a cloud native database with a cloud capable database? What are the use cases that?
So like I mentioned, it's not for some of the resources, all the steps are not perhaps automated, or there are some nitty-gritty parts that yet has to be automated. So what cloud capable softwares do is make those processes a little bit easier. File formatting is one. There are many other use cases that we will bring up in next few episodes to talk about why we should go with like a cloud capable solution to integrate with a cloud native solution.
Got it. And at this point, would you say a cloud capable approach is better than a cloud native approach? And in that, let me reframe my question. Is cloud capable more expensive than a cloud native database?
It really, again, depends on the cost benefit analysis. Like there are very many few instances where you only have a cloud native infrastructure built. Oftentimes we integrate our infrastructure with cloud capable components as well. And MongoDB is a big example, Apache CouchDB as well, Cassandra 2 for big data processing.
Got it. And all these names that you said, Apache CouchDB, MongoDB, Cassandra, are these separate companies?
Yes, they are.
And so you're saying every organization doesn't necessarily have to have one kind of cloud native or cloud capable. They can have cloud native, but also kind of combine with cloud capable in situations that requires.
But that's a very well phrased way of explaining that. Yes. So it depends on the objective you're trying to achieve. So think about it this way, Ashwin. You have all these resources available. Some are cloud native, so they're built within, like AWS has built them, came up with them, or Azure has built them and they came up with it. And you have these other companies that support the cloud native resources. So it depends on the objective. So there, you have all these tools at your disposal. As a business executive, it depends on your objective, which ones you will utilize.
And do we want to talk about a particular cloud provider or a couple of them about what they do in this space?
Absolutely. So today I wanted to focus on some of the more commonly used databases. So Amazon has relational database services that the most common that I have seen used are Amazon Relational Database Service. And in short, it's called RDS. So if you recall what relational database is, it is when the columns have some kind of a relation to the rows through a unique identifier. So RDS provides such a service for data to be stored in such a manner. So this, what Amazon RDS does, it automates common admin tasks to reduce user complexity and then as well as lowers the total cost of ownership. So RDS allows users to manage databases, compute, storage through simple API calls, and you only pay for the infrastructure resources they actually consume.
Got it. At a very broad level, RDS is Amazon's poster boy for relational databases.
Yes, it is. That's a good way to put it.
And did they have more that we want to touch upon?
They have another resource. So the most common is RDS, of course, for relational database. And if you think about data, it needs some kind of warehousing. Now, do you want me to expand on what data warehousing is?
Of course. At this point, I'm thinking data storage, but would love a mini class on that.
So warehousing is a concept. It's more of a process for collecting and managing data from many different sources that provides meaningful business insights. So data warehouse, it can be used to connect and analyze business data from many different heterogeneous sources. And
got it. So it's got that layer of automation that allows you to kind of do something with that data, throw out insights.
Exactly. So it's used more for like BI system, like business intelligence purposes.
So Redshift, it complements a relational database, or is by itself a relational database?
It complements relational database, but it itself is a resource within, like it's a fully managed data warehousing system that Amazon has built.
Got it. And what about Microsoft? Do they have any interesting product?
So the equivalent of RDS, so every cloud provider has some kind of relational database. So like I said, for AWS is RDS. For Microsoft, the name is more straightforward. It's called Microsoft SQL Azure Database. So as the name suggests, it's also a cloud-based relational database built for SQL Server technologies. Again, it's highly available, highly scalable. It's a multi-tenant database service hosted in the cloud. So yeah, if you have to compare one over the other, or what advantages maybe Azure database provides over an RDS, that's another comparison for perhaps another episode.
And does Microsoft have something similar to Redshift, which is that level of automation?
I wouldn't say it's a level of automation. It's called data warehousing. This is a concept by itself in how we process the data. So of course, Microsoft has their own. So SQL Data Warehouse, it's a warehouse as a service. And this is built on massively parallel processing architecture known as an MPP. So I'll pause there for questions from you.
You mentioned something about MPP. I'm not too sure what that is.
So MPP is essentially parallel processing architecture. So to give you an example, Ashwin, first let's start with what parallel computing is, right? So usually in software, it goes in serial computation. So a problem is broken into smaller pieces in a series of instructions that go one after another. That's executed one after another. But now in parallel computing, a problem is still broken into discrete parts, but they can be solved concurrently. That means they can be solved at the same time with different instructions. That's what parallel computing is.
Okay, so you're saying there's six steps. I don't have to do one after two, after three, after four, but at the same time, one can be carried out in a silo from two, from three, from and so on and so forth.
Exactly. So you don't have to wait for the first step to be executed before you move to the next step. You can execute steps one, two, and three at the same time, meaning parallelly, with different functions associated, with different series of instructions.
Awesome. And this is unique to Microsoft's SQL data warehouse?
Yes, it is. So that's why, like, when we talk about the advantages and disadvantages, parallel processing architecture, because it was designed through those mechanisms, it does provide a few advantages over perhaps a Redshift.
What would this mean to a business? Would it mean they would have lesser time that they could execute the same task on if they didn't have that service? Basically, they're saving time?
They're saving time. They're also saving costs. They're saving operational costs, because if you have to wait for one process to execute or one kind of instructions to be executed, it means you do have some lag time. Think of supply and demand. Like if you are talking about agriculture, we are trying to understand how much supply we should have for the demand that we have, or we are trying to draw some kind of forecast in what the supply should be for farmers, right? And we need some kind of intelligence to understand from the data we have available to understand how we are going to forecast this. So instead of breaking this big problem and having it as one piece, and we wait for one part to give us some kind of output, we run the processes parallelly. So this big problem would be broken down into smaller pieces, and we have instructions for all of them to run parallelly, all the components that are dependent that will give us insight into the demand or the supply we should produce. And we have better insight holistically what has to be done, or we have better insight into forecasting.
Got it. And that is Microsoft. Is there Google equivalence here?
So Google, as I've mentioned, I don't have much expertise in this, but I think Google App Engine Data Store, it's built on Bigtable. So that is something that I believe is equivalent to SQL data warehousing. So it's this Google's internal system for handling structured data. So it's called App Engine Data Store.
Got it. But the more popular ones remain Amazon and Microsoft SQL databases.
Yes, in terms of the overall statistics and what customers are drawn towards, it's mostly AWS and then followed by Microsoft Azure.
How do you decide or know that this is the right time to move to something like a Redshift or an RDS? Is there any cost? Is there any cost-benefit analysis or ROI? What's usually done here?
So Ashwin, I would like you to tell me how you think this would work given our discussion so far. Like, how would you do an ROI kind of analysis for a cloud compute model?
Okay, so when you compute ROI, ROI is return on investment, and you're essentially trying to calculate how much money you're going to make. What is the benefit from something like this? So over here, I would like to know what the current model of operation is and what are we moving towards and how much are we saving in that process will be the benefit, right? And to execute that, I would need to consider some costs. So what are the costs that would need to be included while moving to a cloud model?
Right, so you're thinking on the right track. So let me break this down a little bit more with perhaps examples for so our audience can understand. So generally, when we think about applications, it has static demand pattern. That means it has a steady amount of usage and steady amount of users. But for these kinds of environments, there is actually no benefit of using cloud computing environment. What cloud computing is designed to do is actually adapt, increase agility to cater to spikes of traffic. So for example, Ashwin, the comparison we do here is on-premise versus in cloud infrastructure. So what would the costs be if I were to keep my data centers and my database on-premise, which is in-house, versus what would the costs be if I am to migrate this to the cloud? So if you consider in a static demand pattern, there is really not much cost benefit like we get from migrating to cloud computing because the amount of usage is about steady, so it's predictable. But what happens when you have a spike of customers or when you have spikes of volumes of data that you're adding? So that is when it's important for us to move to the cloud to save costs. So if you compare versus on-premise versus a cloud, some of the costs include server costs, networking equipment and software licensing, real estate, energy, cooling, IT admin staff, management, monitoring the software, all associated with on-premise in-house infrastructure. Whereas if you manage the same data centers, the same volume of data in the cloud and you outsource this, it pays a fixed fee for someone to manage these servers.
Like a maintenance charge, just for fake kind of an expense that you're sure about. Okay, this is usually what the norm is.
Exactly. So you're just paying some cloud practitioner to maintain the infrastructure instead of maintaining all the licensing, energy, real estate, and all these other expenses.
Got it. So the ROI formula could naturally lead to just the regular ROI formula, but in the context of the IT world will be net project benefits by the project costs. So when you divide that, you get the proportion of benefit, and when you multiply that by 100, you get a percentage number, which is what ROIs are usually expressed in.
Exactly. So one of the main differences between cloud DaaS and managed services are increased agility. So the ability to get up and run with new products and services faster to be able to meet customer demands, which you would never be able to do with on-premise architectures.
Yeah, I remember episode one where we said you go to market quicker with cloud, and I followed up with a question on that which you broke down really quickly. So listeners, if you were and are curious about that, you should listen to episode one. But I get it. So when you're moving to the cloud, you're easily prepared. You can hit the ground running from day one.
Exactly. And if you think about realistically how customer demand scales up and down, it's not always static. Like, that was the model before the cloud, that we are in a static environment where we can predict the kinds of behavior we would have. But in today's world, especially with the spread of internet and the way customers behave, there can be spikes. Like, things are quite unpredictable. We have to be ready for it. And that's what the cloud helps you do in terms of databases.
But just with the ROI, right? I'm pretty curious because this could be a laborious exercise for someone to literally, okay, write these things down. So does Microsoft, do they make life easy?
Yeah, of course. So Microsoft has a great online calculator for determining ROI. So if you navigate through some of their sites, which we will link in our description, you can find the total cost of ownership of deploying using the resources that they have. And similarly, Google also has a calculator. Amazon also has an online calculator to give their customers an opportunity to estimate the cost they would have. So what I found, Ashwin, most useful is that for clients who want to migrate their data centers to the cloud, in the short term, they see not much value because of the training that goes into it, the costs associated, the relationships that they have to build with cloud providers. So it seems like a cumbersome amount of work. But once you do the analysis for the long term and you use this formula for 5 years or 10 years return, the company saves millions.
Right. And that's why it's kind of an opportunity cost, right? It's, you could be saving so much money if you were doing the cloud. You're not going to immediately see that benefit, but over the long term, it's going to taper off and show you the actual gross savings.
Exactly. So it's more important to convince customers to migrate to the cloud to look into the long-term vision versus the short-term vision. In the first 3 months, perhaps you would break even with using on-premise. But once you look into 6 months, 1 year, 1.5 years, 5 years, the cost savings are huge.
That's interesting. That's super educational. I also read an article that I will link in the show notes below today. Is Slack decided to go ahead with AWS. They were already using AWS, but now Amazon has included Slack in its own company as a messaging tool, and they are going to host all of that in AWS as well.
So I know this episode was quite content heavy, but to recap, we talked about database as a service, some of the common relational databases that AWS uses. One is RDS, for which stands for Amazon Relational Database Service, and Redshift for data warehousing. Equivalent to that would be Microsoft SQL Azure Database for having a SQL server ready. And for data warehousing, it's SQL Data Warehouse. And Google has Google App Engine Data Store that serves a very similar purpose.
And we also discussed ROI, where we said it's the usual formula for an ROI, which is net project benefits divided by project costs into 100, which gives you a percentage figure. But most of the cloud providers today have an online calculator for helping you come up with that figure.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.